Hello, I'm Norma Galumbus. Welcome to the Norma Galumbus Lifestyle Podcast, a part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. Season 5, Episode 1, Spirits in the Hollow, Moonshine. The letter of the law wasn't always followed in historical events. The making of moonshine and illegally produced alcohol started in the early 1800s in England, then in the United States, and years later in Canada. I didn't go looking for modern-day moonshiners, but I wanted to take a look at the fascinating history of this activity in Canada, particularly in Saskatchewan, between 1920 and 1960, approximately. Prohibition. Making moonshine wasn't always illegal. This came about in relation to a lack of regulations and because homebrewers dodged taxation. Prohibition, or the prohibiting of the sale of alcohol, was fueled by the temperance movement. This movement sought to ban the sale of alcohol and thus eradicate the societal problems associated with it. Rules forced on people often caused some to try and circumvent the system, and prohibition was no exception. When the government said people couldn't buy or consume alcohol, many were determined to find a way around that. The solution? Make your own. Where there's a will, there's a way. The production of this clear whiskey-like drink spiked in 1915 when prohibition came into effect in Saskatchewan. It is estimated that 10,000 stills were operating on the prairies during prohibition. The fear of getting caught kept many out of the game, but the lack of available alcohol and the continued demand for it attracted the fearless with an entrepreneurial spirit. The goal of prohibition was not achieved. In fact, it had the opposite effect. There was an increase in the production and sale of illegal alcohol and the seedy activities associated with it. A moonshiner made the liquor, and if it was being sold to the public, a bootlegger or runner transported it. It was difficult to find out exactly how much people paid for the product. The price depended on a lot of things, including the financial situation of people at the time and what was going on in the world. In the early years of Prohibition, $3 got you a gallon. Today, you would pay 10 times that amount. Bootleggers needed souped-up cars that could outrun the law and carry a heavy load. When bootlegging died out, these cars were used for racing. In 1925, the government decided they were losing too much money in uncollected taxes, so Prohibition was repealed. Permits, licensing regulations, and an excise tax on alcohol sales were implemented. Even after Prohibition was repealed, the practice of brewing this high-proof liquor, which could be up to 150 proof or more, continued. Just for reference, vodka today is 40 proof. Demand ebbed and flowed. Production slowed in the mid-30s, but whiskey rationing when World War II broke out in 1939 brought about a resurgence in the demand for moonshine. When the war ended, there was again a decline. The stereotype of a moonshiner. The stereotypical image of a moonshiner, barefoot, bearded, shirtless, wearing denim overalls with one shoulder strap undone and a hillbilly-style hat, is recognized by most. He is savoring a long pull from a stoneware shoulder jug that he hangs onto with one finger. Those guys always looked happy, though, despite the hardships in their lives. The entertainment industry. Homebrew has a long storied history in the film, television, and music industry. It was central to the plot of many movie songs and sitcoms. On the television series The Waltons, the Baldwin sisters made the recipe, or Papa's recipe as they called it, innocently believing it was a legitimate medicine. On the series MASH, the doctors brewed gin for their martinis. They had a mini still that looked like a chemistry experiment set up in an army tent known as the Swamp. Shake the family tree. If you shook your family tree, one or two moonshiners might fall out. The fear of detection was so intense that many decided that, even decades later, they still don't want to talk about it. I had to snicker because when I talk to people about their knowledge of moonshiners, they quickly respond that they don't know anybody that made it. Often, after thought, the truth trickles out, and they divulge that their grandpa, uncle, or neighbor indeed made it. a skilled trade. Moonshiners were proud of their skills, knowledge passed down through the generations, garnered by trial and error. A seasoned moonshiner could check the proof of the product by the size of the bubbles when he shook the jar. Looking at the color and just by smelling it, pure quality shine was crystal clear with no impurities. Ingredients and the process. There wasn't a standard recipe used to make moonshine. A lot depended on the ingredients that were accessible in the region where you lived. Ingredients used in Saskatchewan included sugar, yeast, water, chopped barley, and hops. In other places, potatoes or corn and sometimes overripe fruit for flavoring were used. These ingredients were mixed and left in a barrel in a warm place to ferment for several days. When the mixture, or mash as it was called, stopped bubbling, it was ready to be cooked in a boiler or large pot over a heat source. The rest of the process involved straining the mash and distilling the alcohol out of the liquid. Moonshine needed to be distilled multiple times to achieve the desired result. Pure moonshine, with no added flavor ingredients, had an indefinite shelf life. It didn't require an aging period. It went straight from the still to a jar or jug. The joke was that it aged 10 minutes and then it was ready. To get rid of the evidence and to not waste anything, as this generation was raised to do, the mash was disposed of by feeding it to the farm pigs. That's why the pigs always looked like they were smiling. Poisoned by lead or blown up, shoddy equipment. Stills back in the day were often makeshift homemade apparatuses. Brewers resorted to using old vehicle parts, unaware of the toxic properties that were released when exposed to high temperatures. Occasionally, a still that wasn't properly sealed and vented exploded. Most rural people made the drink for their consumption and for friends and neighbors. They weren't interested in running a big-time operation. Packaging, jug or jar. Ideally, shine should be stored in jugs, which prevent exposure to light, which changes the properties and thus the taste of the product. 1 or 2 quart canning jars were used by many, though, as they were more readily available, cheaper, and less conspicuous than a jug. I assume the only way to acquire mason jars undetected was to raid their wives, moms, grandmas, cellars, or tell the storekeeper that they were for the lady of the house. The girls probably weren't too thrilled about giving up their canning jars, as they were something they coveted. Stoneware jugs were marked with the iconic X symbol, 3 X's, to indicate that the product was high quality, triple distilled. XXX equaled the good stuff. The many names of moonshine. Moonshine had many names, including white spirit, choop, hooch, homebrew, rotgut, mule kick, shine, white lightning, pass around, and firewater. Some of these names bring an image of a guy with flames shooting out of his mouth to mind. The Hubs calls it homebrew, but I prefer the word moonshine as it sounds more badass. Passing the jar, pure and tough. When it was illegal to sell or serve liquor at functions, public drunkenness declined, as it was hard to explain why you were drunk if booze wasn't accessible. It wasn't uncommon, though, for someone to bring a jar of shine to pass around with the fellows outside the venue. No mix was used. They drank it pure and tough. I'm certain the contents of the jar killed any germs left from the last guy who drank from it. Blame it on the egg salad sandwiches. As you can imagine, it wasn't that popular with the women to have their men hanging around outside at a function drinking moonshine. They knew that wasn't going to end well. The guys tried to deny participation in such activities, but many went home splayed out in the back of a wagon or a truck after underestimating the power of the shine. They couldn't always blame it on the egg salad sandwiches that were a staple at every event. I cannot imagine the whopping hangover that followed. Evading detection. In the early years, there weren't a lot of cameras, and when they became more accessible, it wasn't like moonshiners were taking pictures of their operation and getting them developed. A lot of photographs taken of stills and moonshine were done so by law enforcement officers. The alcohol got its name because they made it by the light of the moon to avoid detection. There was a saying, the sun doesn't shine on a moon shine still. Darkness was essential to cover the smoke from the fire. Shiners would make a pattern of a cow's foot and carve it out of wood. They attached this to the bottom of their shoes so that when they walked to their still, it looked like just the cows were walking around there, no humans. These were called cow shoes. There were certain unwritten rules of the trade, including to never set up a still close to your home yard, as the mash had a robust, distinct smell that was a dead giveaway. A secluded hollow in dense bush was best. They usually stored their product away from the house in the event of a search. Chicken coops, wells, and granaries were used, as these were areas people normally went to. Every farm had a manure pile, a mixture of manure and straw from cleaning the animal pens. Hooch would be hidden in these piles, as authorities weren't really inclined to dig in there. At one household, when the law came looking for moonshine, the goods were hidden in plain sight in a water pail sitting in the kitchen with a dipper in it, and no one noticed. Moonshiners expected others to mind their own business, but not all neighbors got along, so you had to be careful or a disgruntled one could snitch on you. Many people disagreed with the practice on moral grounds and reported the illegal activity. In some situations, a feud started that took decades for individuals to let go of the fact that someone they knew had ratted them out. If the law found out where your still was, they dumped everything out and destroyed the equipment or confiscated everything for evidence. Then officers would go to your house to search for stashed product. On occasion, a larger scale operation was executed and officers would go down the line from farm to farm, leaving an officer at the last place to ensure that they didn't alert the other brewers. In small towns, gossip traveled fast, initially by word of mouth and then on the telephone party line. People used prearranged code words when referring to moonshine on the party line. Female accomplices. In those years, it was illegal for police to execute a physical search on a woman. Female RCMP officers weren't employed in Saskatchewan until the 1970s. A woman could hide bottles under her house dress and apron, a coat, or in her boots. A nicely dressed lady in the car made it less likely that a moonshiner or bootlegger would be stopped. Some women also helped with the distillation and packaging of the product. Punishment. A first offense would get you a fine, and repeat offenders would be jailed. There weren't a lot of officers, and they had a large area to cover, but nonetheless, they made a significant number of apprehensions. Females tended to receive lighter punishment, as people found it difficult to believe that a woman could do such a thing. I knew a gentleman who, in his youth, was apprehended and fined for making moonshine. The news was printed in the local paper, and he cut out the clipping and kept it in his wallet for the rest of his life. It added credence to the tale when he recounted it. Big Al. Although it is debatable whether Al Capone ever set foot in Canada, one can't discuss the making of illegal liquor in Saskatchewan without mentioning him. Tunnels were dug under the city of Moose Jaw in 1908 by Chinese immigrants. Legend has it that bootleggers took over the tunnels during Prohibition. Capone was reportedly involved with bootleggers in Canada who helped him and his criminal organization get liquor into the United States. Prohibition went on until 1933 in the States. Moose Jaw was a distribution point between the two countries. Capone was sent to jail in 1931 in the U.S. for tax evasion. Speakeasies. Illegal taverns with live music popped up in cities nationwide during Prohibition. A secret code was required to gain entry. Many of these establishments operated for years. Officials turned a blind eye to them and collected a payment under the table for their support. The toxic side of moonshine, a bad batch. Consuming moonshine produced under questionable conditions was a definite health risk. There are stories of people consuming hooch from a bad batch and suffering blindness, paralysis, or death from methanol poisoning due to improper distillation. The desire to make money was at times more important than the safety of their customers. Methanol was a common contaminant in moonshine, a byproduct of the distilling process. It needs to be separated from the moonshine and discarded. Brewers knew what they were doing throughout the first part of the batch, what they called the four shots, as the methanol stayed on top. Methanol is now produced industrially and used as a solvent. It is the principal ingredient in things like pesticide and paint thinners. So imagine drinking that. If you drink moonshine tainted with methanol, you don't get a second chance. When you consume moonshine with methanol in it, the taste isn't much different to an inexperienced person than untainted brew. Initially, it's hard to tell someone who has methanol poisoning from someone who is really intoxicated. But when the body starts to metabolize the methanol, things go bad really quick. There was a rudimentary way to test the purity of moonshine. They poured a sample into a metal spoon and lit it on fire. If the flame burned blue, it was considered safe. A yellow or red flame meant it was poisonous. One saying was, "Lead burns red and makes you dead." Here's a sobering fact. In the U.S. during Prohibition, 750 people died and 100,000 cases of blindness or paralysis occurred in New York City alone from methanol poisoning. Just a taste. For some strange reason, it is not a clear memory, but I have sampled moonshine in my day. It was a tad too strong for my liking, though. Someone gave me a jar of it once, and I kept it hidden for a long time. But eventually I dumped it out, as I had teenagers by then, and I didn't trust them not to find my stash. That would not have been a good thing. I asked my mom, who is now 92, if she had ever tried it, and she said yes. When you do a little research, you find out interesting things about your family. I would never have pictured mom getting into the hooch. It was claimed that pickle juice made an excellent chaser to help relieve the burning sensation in your mouth and throat. If mom and I had known about the pickle juice remedy, we might have enjoyed our white lightning experiences more. Yes, it's still illegal. Now don't be getting all excited after reading this and running out and get the equipment and ingredients to make moonshine. Although it's still illegal to make hard liquor, by 1985, you were no longer required to possess a permit to make wine or beer for your own consumption. It is still illegal, though, to sell homemade wine and beer without a license. Illicit distillation continues around the world. More sophisticated and safer practices are used, but the old bush setups still exist. The ravages of time. Subsequent landowners frequently found remnants of abandoned stills deep in the underbrush. Broken jars and jugs, copper pipe, and rusted out metal boilers were usually all that remained. Easy come, easy go. I admit there have been a few rough patches through the years when I questioned my decision to dump out that jar of shine. I should have kept it for medicinal purposes, calling it my rheumatism medicine or spring tonic like Granny Clampett did on the Beverly Hillbillies television series. She had her still set up right by the swimming pool. It might have made the pandemic go by quicker. Oh well, easy come, easy go. Visit my lifestyle blog for episode pictures and links to my garden and published works pages, food blog, and gift shop. My website address is in the episode notes. The Saskatchewan Podcast Network is supported by Direct West. Is marketing getting in the way of running your business? Direct West has a local expert team right here in Saskatchewan that will work with you to build your website exactly how you imagine it. Let them help you improve your online presence and head to directwest.com to learn more.
The Saskatchewan Podcast Network is supported by Kinexys. Savings, checkings, GIC, budget, RESP, RRSP, TFSA, mutual funds, credit score, emergency funds, variable versus fixed rates, compound interest, retirement. The list goes on and on. It's time to make sense of it all. At Kinexys Credit Union, they want to help. Financial literacy is a critical life skill, giving you the knowledge and confidence to make smart, responsible decisions about your money. Visit KinexysMoneyTalk.ca to find expert advice, tips, and solutions for all life stages and events, and increase your financial literacy knowledge and confidence today.